I took responsibility for what I had done. And they wanted to try to court-martial me, which would have been 8 years in prison, but it ended up just being non-judicial punishment, a $5,000 fine.
Well, as I mentioned, when I was a company commander in Vietnam, I had a guy who, same kind of situation, didn't want to talk. I walked up and put a bullet from my .45 caliber pistol in the ground next to his foot, and suddenly he started talking. And in both cases, what we were doing was trying to protect our soldiers, which is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to bring them back safe if we can. And somebody who's clearly not working with the enemy, who we did not physically abuse, I think that's what we're supposed to do. But that's an example of the weird rules of engagement that we at least used to have. And that's a lot of soldiers got hurt by that, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And as a matter of fact, I was just recently talking to someone about that over the weekend, about how, you know, this whole thing about IEDs. And it is unconscionable to me that we know that people are going to come out at night on the routes that we take, and there are routes that they know that we take, and they are in place in these IEDs. Well, why is it that they're able to do this in the middle of the night? We should have all kind of drones and surveillance, helicopters up, and if someone's on the side of the road, you know, planting something that does not look like corn, they should be immediately eliminated and taken out. But when you have these rules on the battlefield that are dictated by, you know, a lot of these lawyers who have, you know, subsumed so much power, that says unless someone shows you immediate hostile intent, you cannot engage them. Well, you know, that's how the enemy finds the gaps by which they can exploit us. And so many of these IEDs get laid out there, and it causes death and wounds to our troops.
And that's something that we as leaders and our leaders are supposed to avoid. Somehow we've got this idea that in war, no civilians are ever supposed to get hit. Well, I'll go along with that as a goal, but according to the rules of war, combatants have to dress like combatants. And when the enemy that you fought and the enemy that some of the enemy I fought and the enemies our troops are fighting today, they're, by that standard, they're all war criminals because they don't dress differently. Mm-hmm. So don't be counting the number of civilians who got in the way when some of those guys are hiding behind their wives and children while they're shooting at Americans.
You're absolutely
right. That's ridiculous.
And that's the thing that we fail to understand at the strategic level. These are non-state, non-uniform belligerents on the battlefield. And the Geneva Convention is very specific about, you know, they don't have rights as the same as a soldier that fights for a declared nation. And I think that we go overboard. I understand being humane, but when we're talking about engaging this enemy that's trying to blend in with civilian populace, they're the ones that are causing the civilian casualties more than anything else. And furthermore, when you look at how we are punishing our young men in these combat situations, to charge them with premeditated murder in a combat zone, you might as well be writing speeding tickets at the Daytona 500.
I like that parallel. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking rules of engagement with Colonel Alan West. Alan, I took a look the other day at the lists of soldiers, mostly Army soldiers, a good number of Navy SEALs, and a few Marines on the list that I saw, which I don't pretend to be comprehensive. It's hard for me as a soldier to encourage people to join the military where that might happen to them. Now, I don't think those rules of engagement are still in effect, but I don't know that.
Well, so a lot of them has changed. I mean, and you can tell by the results on the battlefield. I mean, ISIS, their territorial integrity was taken apart so quick because you now have a commander-in-chief that's not micromanaging generals in the field or White House staffers calling down to, you know, the operational and tactical level commanders and bypassing the Pentagon and Joint Chiefs of Staff. So I think that that is why we're successful in getting things done. Can they still be improved? Absolutely. But I think right now what the focus has to be is on these young men that have been wronged over these past few years. And a couple of them have had exculpatory evidence withheld in their cases. And that means that you have military lawyers that are doing things that are unprofessional, unethical, too, that should cause them to be disbarred.
Well, I don't know this to be true, but I believe it's true that when the Army downsized 10 years ago or 15 years ago, somebody decided to keep the JAG Corps, the lawyers, the same number. So now all of a sudden, every battalion has got a lawyer in it. When I was in combat, I served at division level for a while. I never saw one lawyer. And now apparently battalions, and they're interrogating people when they come back from combat. I don't get that at all. That's certainly nothing like any combat unit I could imagine. It's got to be horrible.
Yeah, and it is horrible. And the thing is that it makes guys second-guess themselves in a firefight or in an engagement or a potential engagement. And you and I very well know that in a firefight, in the first 2 to 3 seconds, someone could lose their life. And you don't want to see our troops in combat and in contact, you know, cede over the initiative to the enemy because they're fearful of some lawyer that is sitting back there, you know, fat, dumb, and happy on the forward operating base or at a larger base, you know, having nice hot coffee and hot chow while they're out there doing the work and being the guardians of this republic and being the watchman on the wall.
Yeah, and, you know, I can't even imagine a battalion, a squad, a platoon coming back and having some lawyer say to you, the private standing next to me, did Gillum shoot somebody? Yes. Did he have a good reason to? Because if you'll testify against him, we won't charge you.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly what's happening.
And that just, well, I'm already a little nuts, but that makes me even crazier. How do you lead troops like that? How, as a leader, do you not stand up and say, then I resign, get me out of here, I can't live in this environment? How do we have generals who live with that?
Well, it's tough because what ends up happening is these folks break down unit cohesion.
Yeah.
Because they start to, you know, pit, you know, the troops against their combat leaders, you know, being them senior enlisted or officers. And you also have this sense of the commissar, you know, how they used to have in the old Soviet Union army, the person that is there not to support the unit, but to report things up to a different and separate chain of command. And then that also causes a very tentative, very anxiety-oriented atmosphere in a unit because they don't feel that they're free to go out and do their job. They don't feel that they're free, you know, when they have come back from a patrol or whatever to sit down and shoot the you-know-what, as we used to say.
Yeah.
Because someone might be taking notes and someone might come back and do something against them.
And therefore you can't relax. There's more to discuss about this, and Colonel West is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. Then take a break to stay in the area. Colonel West and I will be right back. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I ordered my men to open fire on the enemy in Vietnam. For doing the same thing in Afghanistan, Lieutenant Clint Lawrence was court-martialed and sent to Fort Leavenworth under President Obama. Now Green Beret Major Matthew Goldstein and Navy SEAL Chief Edward Gallagher have been court-martialed. Killing terrorist combatants ought not to be a crime. To restore freedom to those who fought for ours, sign my petition at restorefreedom.info. Congressman Duncan Hunter and I will deliver your message to Washington. Let's rally for unfairly accused combat warriors. Restorefreedom.info. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This message is paid for by the Uniformed Services League.
This weekend, unplug. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big Z coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation about abused combat veterans with Colonel Alan West. So we very much agree that one of the problems is there's too many lawyers. I mean, I guess if I was a young lawyer and I joined the Army and they assigned me to a unit, a battalion or something, I'd want to do something. So I guess that's understandable that they go out and try to do the lawyer thing. But I think the Army, I presume Marines, Navy, I don't know about them, needs to reduce the number of lawyers, one, to save the money, but two, to help us restore combat readiness and combat cohesion. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I think that one of the most important things is that I like the Marine Corps model. Every Marine is a rifleman, first and foremost. And so even if you're going to be a JAG officer in the Marine Corps, you're going to go to the basic school, TBS, and you're going to learn what it's like to be, you know, a ground combat Marine. That's their foundation. So I think that when you have people that, you know, finish law school, you slap a uniform on them, and then they go to a unit, and all of a sudden there's a JAG officer there, whichever side of the JAG bench they're on. They don't have the same understanding of what it means to be out there at the tactical level and really be around those troops on the ground. And then all of a sudden, as we talked about in the previous segment, you know, when they're there, you know, they create a sense of anxiety and they create a sense of distrust because you have your soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines that are there and they don't really understand why this person is here, what they're to do. Is he taking notes? Is he keeping a list? I mean, what have you? Well, you know, think about the movie Lone Survivor, how here you have a compromised, you know, Navy SEAL reconnaissance mission, and their biggest concern in dealing with those Afghan sheep herders was that they didn't want bodies to be found, and next thing you know, they were going to be on CNN or whatever as war criminals. So what did they do? They let them go, and it ended up three of the four in that team lost their lives, and then we also had that helicopter that was shot down as part of that rescue mission. And so that's what we don't want to have. We don't want to have our young men and women on the ground second-guessing themselves. And a great case, you know, Clint Lawrence, a Texan, young man who ordered the firing on of the Taliban. I mean, the Taliban uses motorcycles. They scout out your position, and then they report back what they have seen. They were ordered not to come near the position. You know, and they continued to close on the position Clint ordered the firing of them. Now, what Clint is sitting around with 15 to 20 years in prison in Fort Leavenworth for premeditated murder. This is what we ask our combat leaders to do, is to kill and engage the enemy. But yet when you have someone that is a deserter, like Bo Bergdahl, some Army judge decides that he suffered enough and he should go free, even though he admitted to being a deserter, and he basically admitted and pled guilty to the fact that three or four other soldiers had lost their lives trying to find him. So, you know, what message does that send to these young troops in the on the ground when the deserter gets to go free?
I agree.
Me being here and doing what I'm supposed to do, now I'm the one sitting in prison.
Well, I did what Clint Lawrence did when I was in Vietnam. My first tour, I was a first lieutenant, new platoon leader in combat. At least one occasion, my troops told me that what they saw, and I ordered, I didn't have a gun truck, mortars or artillery, I don't remember what, I ordered to be engaged. That's what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if ever there was a classic example of a platoon leader doing exactly what his job is supposed to be, Clint Lawrence is an example of that.
You're right. And what ends up happening is that, you know, you fast forward about, I think, 3 or 4 years, and there's an Air Force patrol in Afghanistan, and a motorcycle with a couple of folks, suicide bomber, approaches their patrol. They didn't take any action. And guess what happens? They detonate, and the members of that patrol are killed. Because in the back of their minds, they have these, like you say, the goofy rules of engagement, and they don't want to end up in jail. They don't want to end up in prison. I mean, if you think that our troops are not talking about these cases and talking about these situations, you know, hey, you got to be careful. You probably shouldn't want to do this. You don't want to do that. You don't want to end up like Lieutenant Lawrence or whomever that's sitting back, you know, in Fort Leavenworth. I don't want to lose my freedom. I'll take the chance of this happening. And what that means is that they're putting their lives in danger because they're more so afraid of lawyers on the battlefield than the enemy on the battlefield. And that's a horrible thing.
That is horrible. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Colonel Alan West. Alan, there was recently an event in Washington, D.C. to bring public attention to this issue, and I think you were a speaker there. And there's going to be another one on the 10th of July in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
There are groups out there, but the goal of the groups is to influence the president and or Congress to get these people, one, out of jail, but two, have the conviction removed from their lives. And that's something our listeners can do. They can contact their congressman. They can write the president. The event on the 10th of July is called the Restore Freedom event. RestoreFreedom.info will give you all the information you want on it. And again, the purpose is to bring the attention of the president on these. There are some soldiers that did stupid criminal things. We're not talking about them. We're talking about the soldiers who did their job the way they should have done it and have been convicted murderers today if they're out of prison yet. Those are the people we want to stand up for. Alan, thank you for talking about that. Take a minute now and talk about what you're doing in Texas besides being a guest on Frontlines of Freedom.
Well, you know, we continue to stand up and fight for, you know, freedom and liberty here in Texas. The progressive socialist left has the Lone Star State in their sights. That's why, you know, I wrote the book, Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, Victory or Death. You can get it on Amazon.com. You can follow me on TheOldSchoolPatriot.com. That's our website. And then also on Facebook, on YouTube, and Instagram. So we're just trying to make sure that we honor the oath that you and I took to the Constitution of the United States of America and keep this a free country.
Alan, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today, and thank you for your service to our nation. I'm proud to call you brother.
Airborne, sir, all the way.
That event on the 10th of July, go to restorefreedom.info. That's restorefreedom.info. Now it's time for our Stand Tall Troop Report. This is when I find an outstanding performance of duty and we get to honor this fine troop. A former staff sergeant, Army guy, who took on enemy fighters at close range, first with an M249 light machine gun and then with a knife, will be the first living veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom to receive a Medal of Honor. He's also a talk radio host, so this guy's a great guy. David Bellavia, 43, of Batavia, New York, will receive the medal on June 25th at the White House. His Silver Star citation for heroism on 10 November 2004 in Fahula, Iraq, read like the script for an action movie. An infantryman with Company A, 1st Infantry Division, 2nd Task Force 22, Bellavia was ordered with his platoon to clear a 12-building block in which jihadists were taking shelter in order to fire on American troops. They cleared the first nine with no problems. Bellavia and four other soldiers entered the 10th building and found them under fire from insurgents. As more soldiers rushed to reinforce, the close quarters combat became hot and intense, and troops began to go down with injuries. At this point, Sergeant Bellavia, armed with a saw machine gun, entered the room where the insurgents were located and sprayed the room with gunfire, forcing the jihadists to take cover and allowing the squad to move out into the street. He'd find himself one man pitted against a house full of armed fighters. He first encountered an insurgent with a rocket-propelled grenade and took him out. He would continue to fight and fell insurgents until he was joined by five other members of his platoon. He left the Army in 2005 after 6 years of service, co-founded a political advocacy organization, Veterans for Freedom. He documented his military experiences in House to House, an epic memoir of war, co-written with John Bruning and published in 2007. So stand tall, Sergeant Bellavia. Frontlines of Freedom and all of our nation's patriots salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Renee Nickel about her book about her warrior brother. Then Nathaniel Philbrick will discuss his book, In the Hurricane. And then we'll talk with weatherman Bill Steffen about his warrior dad. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America report. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam. Troops, it's time to run. Run a couple of miles of wind sprints, then grab some protein and rehydrate with water. Finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs entirely online. Flexible scheduling makes these programs convenient for working professionals. Continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence, classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's granting public college in the South. Online, on your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
Wouldn't it be great to see your windows in a whole new light? Do it right. Call your local neighborhood experts. Budget Blinds. You'll get beautiful style and personalized service for every budget. We bring the showroom right to your home, so you can choose from hundreds of blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes. Plus, smart home window coverings you control with the touch of a button. And with Budget Blinds, we do it all for you. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy. There's a reason why Budget Blinds is the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America. When we say we have style and service for every budget, we really mean it. So let's get your home a whole lot of gorgeous. Get your free consultation right at home. Just go online to budgetblinds.com or call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS for your free consultation right at home. Now that's beautiful. At participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
I started going cold turkey, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it.
I do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple. I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
I just got to watch, and the Republicans are absolutely killing it. They are doing so well because it's a scam. It's a big scam.
President Trump's comments at the White House after a cabinet meeting. Of course, the president talking about the ongoing House impeachment investigation. Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Jordan says National Security Council Ukraine expert Alexander Vindman's supervisors and colleagues had concerns.
Your boss had concerns about your judgment. Your former boss, Dr. Hill, had concerns about your judgment. Your colleagues had concerns about your judgment. And your colleagues felt that there were times when you leaked information.
Jordan also calls this the most unfair process he's ever seen. E-cigarette company Juul is facing another lawsuit, this one by the state of New York. The lawsuit says that Juul is marketing their products toward young people to get them hooked on vaping, much like Big Tobacco did. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Did you know the average rate on credit cards in the U.S. is over 17%?
And the average credit card debt is over $16,000 per household.
Hey everyone, this is Mike.
And this is Brian with Fellowship Home Loans.
Credit cards. It's hard to live without them, but wouldn't it be great if we could?
It is possible. For over 15 years now, we have helped homeowners out of the pit of despair with revolving credit cards with a Fellowship Home Loans debt consolidation refinance.
You could save hundreds, even thousands on your monthly payments, increase your tax deductions, and lower your mortgage rate.
Plus, as a bonus, maybe you'll sleep a little easier after you cut up those cards.
Give us a call at 800-804-SAVE. That's 800-804-7283 and see how much you could save.
Or online at fellowshiphomeloans.com. FellowshipHomeLoans.com.
Fellowship Home Loans. Welcome home.
Intercontinental Capital Group, DBA Fellowship Home Loans, Equal Housing Opportunity Lender, MLS number 60134.
2020 Democratic presidential candidates are continuing to campaign across the country. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes in Washington.
South Bend, Indiana Mayor and 2020 Democratic hopeful Pete Buttigieg speaking last night at a historically black college in Atlanta. He was asked by reporters to comment on his new front-runner status in Iowa.
We're certainly making sure we're ready for anything that will come, but the bottom line remains our message and what I'm proposing to do for this country. That's carried us this far.
Thousands of teachers from across Indiana are marching to the state capitol, Indianapolis, and demanding more pay and more funding for public schools.
When your students tell you to go, you go, and you stand up for those kids.
More than 140 schools are closed across the state, and the Indianapolis Star is reporting that e-learning programs are being provided for students whose classes were canceled. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
On the day that two federal correctional officers were charged in connection with failing to properly monitor sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, who committed suicide in a New York City jail, Republican Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana has this exchange with the director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, Kathleen Hawke Sawyer.
Christmas ornaments, drywall, and Jerry Epstein. Name three things that don't hang themselves. That's what the American people think. That's what the American people think. And they deserve some answers. And I know that you're not in charge of these investigations.
Yes, sir.
But you talk to the people who are. And I need you to take a very respectful message today. Tell the American people what happened. And don't rush it so that they don't do a thorough investigation. But you and I both know they can make this a top priority and get it done more quickly than they normally would. They need to do that. And I'd like you to deliver that message.
I agree with you, sir, but I have no control. I mean, I can pass along the message, but the FBI and the Inspector General's office work on their own time frame. But I will definitely give you their message because I want the investigations completed as soon as possible, too, so that we can act.
I have a feeling you know how to be firm.
A little bit.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com. at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. I have several friends who are the alumni of the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. This great institution allows cadets to further their education and earn a commission in our military if they desire, which about one in every three does. Ranked as the number one public college in the South, the Citadel also offers master's degree graduate certificates online or on campus. If you're looking for a bachelor or master's degree, this might be the college for you. Check citadel.edu. Here's what we have for you this hour. First, Renee Nickel will share about her book, Always My Hero, about her Marine brother. Then we'll discuss how the Revolutionary War really was won with author Nathaniel Philbrick. And Bill Steffens will share stories about his combat veteran's father on this Our Father's Day show. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America report. Troops, I welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's a pleasure to introduce Renee Nickel. She's a Gold Star sister who lost her Marine brother in combat, and she's written an amazing book about him entitled Always My Hero. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Renee.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Renee, tell us a little bit about your background. Talk about growing up with your brother Sam.
We just had a blast. We grew up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, and, you know, we were latchkey kids. Both our parents worked, and so, you know, we had a lot of freedom to just roam around and find adventures and get into trouble, try to get out of trouble. So, you know, he was just a character, just really, really warm and funny, and we just had a great time growing up in Pennsylvania. And then when I was 10 years old, when we moved to North Carolina area, and then from there, after which I became a military wife and he joined the Marines. And so we've been all over since then.
Okay. That makes sense. You know, I grew up with three sisters and I always thought it was a brother's job to pick on sisters. Did your brother do a good job of picking on you?
Oh, he sure did. Yeah. You know, he always told me that he was going to give me a knuckle sandwich. And I know, I didn't know what that was, but I know I never wanted a knuckle sandwich. And, you know, he would hold me down and he'd give me Indian burns for, you know, harassing him. And
okay.
So,
A good brother. What else can we say? Okay.
Exactly.
So when and why did he join the Marines?
Well, he always wanted to be a pilot from the time he was about 5 years old. And we thought he would become an astronaut, or, you know, his original plan was to join the Air Force. And when it came time for him to go to college, he wanted to go to Penn State, which he did. And he joined the Navy ROTC at Penn State. But after his first semester, the Marine Corps offered him a full ride if he switched to the Marines. So he could still fly jets. That was his goal. And so that's how he ended up joining the Marine Corps.
What were your feelings about him joining the military in general and the Marines in particular?
I didn't think really one way or another. You know, my dad was in the Army. You know, a lot of my uncles were in the military, Air Force, Army. My grandparents all served in World War II. I wasn't worried or anything. It just seemed like the natural course for him. And my mom had some concerns about him being a Marine. And, you know, and when I was 16 years old, when he went to college, I didn't really know the difference between Air Force, Marines, Army. You know, it wasn't really until I became a military spouse that I really learned the differences of the branches.
That makes sense. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the book, Always My Hero, with Renee Nickel. Okay, so he became a Marine, obviously a pilot. How did your relationship with him change, or did it change, when he was now a pilot in the military and you're not?
Well, you know, I was always really proud of him. And I would brag to people, to my friends, any chance I got, my brother flies F-18s, because I thought it was the coolest thing in the world that my brother flew jets. And to me, he was just my big brother, you know, sometimes annoying, sometimes, you know, just silly. Yeah. And so I never really saw him as this Marine Corps officer who flies jets. You know, a lot of people respected, because to me, he's still the guy who would punch me in the arm when I was 21 years old.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so I thought it was really cool that he flew jets, but, you know, to me, he was just still Sam. But it was hard you know, kind of living in his shadow. You know, I kind of just lived in his shadow most of our childhood and growing up.
Okay. Talk about his time in combat.
His first tour in Iraq, he just, it was in 2003. It was after 9/11, and he went for, you know, straight 90 days and dropped some ordnance in Iraq. And then, you know, his second tour was to Iraq. It was after he stopped flying, and he became a forward air controller with the 4th Anglico. And, you know, he didn't see too much action. And I think there's, you know, a few reasons why he went to Afghanistan for the third tour while he volunteered. But, you know, I think he wanted to see some combat. You know, he had been training for years with the 4th Anglico. And so that, you know, I mean, he ended up losing his life 5 weeks into the tour, you know, so he, you know, just unfortunately just was seeing too much combat. You know, he stepped in for another one of his other Marines. So,
okay. And talk about that now as his sister. When you found out what happened, how did you and your family respond?
When I found out, it was the morning of December 14th in 2011, and I was getting my kids ready for school. I was we were actually stationed at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, and you know, I was planning on going shopping, and it was 7:30 in the morning, and my phone rings, and it's my mom, and I'm wondering why my mom is calling me at 7:30 in the morning. And, you know, and I was just like, oh, it's my mom, you know. So I picked up the phone. I was like, hey, Mom. You know, and she's crying hysterically. I can't even understand a word she's saying. And, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, something must have happened to my brother. Like, he must have been injured. But, you know, I had this moment where I'm relieved that he's coming home. Because in my mind, my brother was invincible, like, just untouchable. You know, to me, he was and is my hero, and I just never saw him as someone who could lose his life in war. And, you know, my mom just kind of slowed her talking, and she was like, you know, Renee, Sam was killed in Afghanistan, and I just lost it. You know, I dropped the phone, fell to my knees, and you know, it was a tough day.
Of that, I believe. Folks, we're going to give away a copy of this book, Always My Hero, at the end of the show. But, Renee, I'm sure some listeners will want to buy them. I presume it's available on Amazon and lots of other places.
It is. Any online retailer has it available.
He obviously had a family, so this is our Father's Day show. I take it that he was also a darn good father.
He was an excellent father. You know, he lost his life the day before his youngest son's birthday, his sixth birthday. And, you know, and I have a daughter now who's 4 years old. I have a son who's 8. And, you know, and actually my second daughter was 5 at the time when Sam was killed. And you know, and every time they reach an age, you know, and I think about, you know, those boys and how they lost their dad. He had 2 sons. One was, you know, like I said, had just turned 6, and the other one was turning 8 a few months later. But he was an outstanding dad. He wanted to spend every single moment he could with them when he was home.
Sounds like Always My Hero is an appropriate title. Renee, thank
you. Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for honoring one of our nation's true heroes. He was a husband and a father, and we honor him especially on this Father's Day. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, we'll discuss the Revolutionary War with historian Nathaniel Philbrick. Then my friend Bill Steffen will discuss his combat vet dad. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. I want you to balance on 1 foot for 3 minutes, then balance on the other foot for 3 minutes. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
This hour of Front Lines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, health care, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Look like sheep and you'll be eaten by wolves. According to interviews done with armed robbers, you are far more likely to be targeted by criminals if you look weak and helpless. Carry yourself with pride and military bearing, because many criminals can spot a soft target with one glance. Stay alert and aware of your surroundings. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to introduce the noted author and historian Nathaniel Philbrick. He's written about our Revolutionary War. His latest book, In the Hurricane's Eye, is clearly on that topic, and it showed an aspect of the war that I knew existed but didn't realize I didn't understand. I guess you're really a naval guy, Nathaniel, so should I say welcome aboard?
Yeah, that sounds appropriate for a guy who lives on Nantucket Island, yeah.
Okay, that works. Give us a little bit of your background into your history. How did you become interested in and involved in history in general, early history and naval history?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in that maritime center of the universe, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But when I was a kid, summering at my grandparents' place on Cape Cod, I learned how to sail. And for me, that was just transformative. I loved the sense of independence. I just, you know, loved being out on the water, the interaction with nature and all that. And I became a competitive small boat racer in college, and then when my wife and I turned 30, we had two little kids. My wife was a lawyer, and she had been working in Boston, but the commute to the house we owned outside Boston was driving both of us crazy. She got a job on Nantucket, and I was a huge fan of Moby Dick's at that point. That I've always regarded that novel as my personal Bible. And we, of course, were moving to what had been in the 19th century the whaling capital of the world,
yeah.
Nantucket. And so I became interested in the history of what was now my adopted home and would write my first work of history, A Way Offshore, A History of Nantucket. And that introduced me to the story of the Essex disaster, the whale ship that was rammed by a whale in 1820 and eventually inspired the climax of Moby Dick, which I wrote about in the heart of the sea. And so that sort of set me on the path I've been on ever since. Each book seems to evolve organically from the one before it. And I've always had kind of a maritime interest coming from the perspective I do. I I think, you know, America's been defined by a sense of wilderness, and we think of that as the West, but before there was the West, there was the sea. That was really the defining wilderness of this country, and I think it's underappreciated and an important part of our history.
I've never thought about putting it the way you just did, but I couldn't agree more with you. And also, when I learned to sail, I got totally hooked on it, but I wasn't able to continue it. So you actually lived out what I sort of started wanting to do. So that's cool. Okay, let's talk about In the Eye of the Hurricane. That really, as I mentioned before, touches what were, at least to me, and I'm a bit of a historian in that area, some not realized parts of how we were winning the Revolutionary War is the right word, but how we made the movement that led to a successful end to the war.
Well, you know, even for me, a maritime guy, I didn't fully appreciate the importance of the sea to the ultimate course of the American Revolution. You know, I grew up thinking of it as kind of linear, each battle a stepping stone to the next battle that ultimately led to our victory at Yorktown. But in writing the three books about the Revolution, Bunker Hill and Valiant Ambition Proceeding in the Hurricane's Eye, I began to appreciate that it wasn't that way at all. By 1780, when Benedict Arnold unsuccessfully attempts to surrender West Point to the British, the war has devolved into a stalemate. The British under Sir Henry Clinton are dug into New York, you know, more than 10,000 soldiers there. Washington is based on the Hudson, basically just staring at Clinton. Washington complains that the war drags on like a cart without wheels. You know, there's fighting happening, but most of that's to the south, and it's not good. Horatio Gates, the hero of Saratoga, loses the Battle of Camden to Lord Cornwallis. And, you know, it's just kind of we're stuck in a rut. And what Washington realized was that the only way he could win the victory that might end this thing in a favorable way for America was with the help of the French Navy. The French had joined the war in the spring of 1778. And up until that point, Britain, which was the most powerful naval force in the world, had control of the Atlantic seaboard, which meant that they could not only take any harbor or city on the water that they chose to, but they could transport their troops up and down the seaboard with relatively lightning speed, and there's just nothing Washington could do to contain them. But if the French Navy should bring over a naval force that was roughly equivalent and establish naval superiority along a section of the American coastline, that would give Washington the opportunity to win the victory on land that might end this thing. And so Washington saw this with a clarity that I think no one, even the naval people in France, completely understood as clearly as he did. And so that became his obsession throughout the alliance, was to get the French Navy up the Atlantic coast to help him out. Unfortunately, the French had their own priorities, and a lot of that involved the Caribbean. So it was a very difficult alliance from Washington's perspective.
But he sure pulled it off, didn't he?
He pulled it off. And, you know, that's another side. You know, he understood the sea, but he also was really adept at working the alliance. You know, I think we have a tendency in retrospect to think of the partnership between America and France as this, you know, benign, ideal melding of two great noble causes. But the fact of the matter, the French were only in it to take it to the British. They had been humiliated during the Seven Years' War, also known as the French and India War in America. They had lost Canada. Their ally, Spain, had lost Florida, Alabama, New Orleans to the British. And they were angry, and they wanted to take Great Britain down a peg and restore the power that France and Spain had enjoyed prior to the Seven Years' War. And so as soon as they entered the war, it turned a colonial rebellion into a world war. And Americans, I think, in their self-serving way, tend to think of the 13 colonies as the jewel in the empire's crown, when actually the real money was to be made in the Caribbean, in the sugar plantations. And so as soon as France and Spain enter the war, their navies head south into the Caribbean, and they duke it out. France gets Tobago, the British get St. Lucia. They're battling it out back and forth and leaving Washington all by himself. He's got a small French force in Newport, a small naval force with 5,000 soldiers under General Rochambeau, but the British Navy has a blockade, and they're bottled up there and unable to go anywhere. So once again, there's Washington engineering all this, and ultimately it would result in the Battle of the Chesapeake that would make possible the great victory at Yorktown.
And what an amazing story that is, and what an amazingly clear way that's presented in this book. I'm just in awe of the book. folks, if you have not read In the Hurricane's Eye, you want to do it. Nathaniel, people can buy that almost everywhere, I'm sure. Amazon, all the bookstores, I'm sure it's out everywhere, isn't it?
It is. Penguin has just reissued the two previous books about the Revolution I've written, Bunker Hill and Valiant Ambition, and they repackaged them wonderfully. And so you can not only get In the Hurricane's Eye in paperback, but you can also get all three of them, the set. You know, it's been great to finally reach this point and see this war to its conclusion, because I've been working on it as long as the war itself. And it's been quite a deep dive and a fascinating one from my perspective.
And it's amazing how few Americans really understand our history. So three books that will help you understand as clearly as any three I could imagine our Revolutionary War and how and why we won it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what people don't understand is, you know, without France, we would not have won our freedom.
Amen.
We needed that alliance.
Amen. Nathaniel, thank you. Thank you for your book. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you. That book is a service to our nation because it makes clear about how our country began, truly. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. Coming from you, it really means a lot to me.
Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll talk with Bill Steffen about his veteran father on this, our Father's Day show. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do 18 with each arm, then stand at ease, but do stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs that are entirely online. These programs are convenient for working professionals and those serving in the U.S. military. Continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence, classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's-granting public college in the South. The Citadel. Online, on your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As the impeachment inquiry against President Trump continues, Republican Congressman from Texas John Ratcliffe says wording that's being used by Democrats, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, has changed.
Washington Times asked Americans what would be the most damning accusation. And it didn't come back quid pro quo. It didn't come back extortion. It came back bribery. So this case is all about bribery. If Democrats accuse the president of a high crime or impeachable offense, he at least ought to know which one it is. And when Speaker Pelosi says this is all about bribery, she's promised us evidence of bribery that would be compelling and overwhelming, and instead, it's invisible.
The two correction officers on duty when convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide are facing charges for falsifying prison records. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Dish TV is better than cable TV. Why? Because you can save 45% on packages compared to your high-priced cable bill. Wow. Take those giant scissors out and cut the cable and save with Dish TV. Plus, you get a free DVR upgrade to record your favorite shows and free installation. And with Dish Anywhere, you can watch TV for free on your mobile device. Act fast. You can save hundreds of dollars. Does your cable company do that for you? I don't think so. Get all the best TV programming at your fingertips at a fraction of the price of cable TV. So say adios, arrivederci, goodbye to the high cable bill, and save up to 45% on Dish TV packages today. These are limited time offers and can change at any time. Call fast. 800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. That's 800-610-5739.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com. Please tune in to Living Consciously, where myself and my co-host will entertain you, inform you, and educate you in certain modalities. Living consciously is something that we really must learn to do, because that way you'll know what's going on around you. This show can be heard at 2 p.m. every Friday on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Thank you.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As the impeachment inquiry against President Trump continues, Republican Congressman from Texas John Ratcliffe says wording that's being used by Democrats, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, has changed.
Washington Times asked Americans what would be the most damning accusation, and it didn't come back quid pro quo, it didn't come back extortion, it came back bribery. So this case is all about bribery. If Democrats accuse the president of a high crime or impeachable offense, he at least ought to know which one it is. And when Speaker Pelosi says this is all about bribery, she's promised us evidence of bribery that would be compelling and overwhelming, and instead, it's invisible.
The two correction officers on duty when convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide are facing charges for falsifying prison records. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Filling an opening at your company means more than just finding an employee. You're looking for a fit, a match. Robert Half understands that. We know you need someone who can do the work, someone who complements your culture. And, of course, you need that someone fast. When it all comes together, it makes for a perfect fit. Satisfaction guaranteed. Robert Half, the matching experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Visit roberthalf.com for more information.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association Annual Convention in Washington, D.C., I spoke with Dr. John Howe, AVMA President, about One Health.
One Health is really a collaboration between physicians and veterinarians or public health officials. For example, in Minnesota, our state public health veterinarian deals with zoonotic diseases, rabies, for example. Animals are sentinels for humans, and humans are sentinels for some infections in animals.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
President Trump says if there's no deal with China, he'll raise tariffs even higher.
Look, China's going to have to make a deal that I like. If they don't, that's it, okay? Well, I'm very happy with China right now. They're paying us billions and billions. We'll be over $100 billion in the not-too-distant future.
The president's comments coming before a cabinet meeting at the White House. The president also says he's very happy with where things stand regarding trade talks with China. As the holiday travel season kicks off, new data is out regarding folks wearing their seatbelts. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Just released data from the Governor's Highway Safety Association shows that last year, 803 unrestrained rear seat vehicle passengers ages 8 and up were killed in crashes on U.S. highways. The association says it shows more than half of those lives might have been saved if the passengers had been properly buckled up.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root, the conservative warrior. My show War Now airs every day right here on USA Radio from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm also the star of the Wayne Allyn Root Show on Newsmax TV, reaching over 50 million homes. But my favorite role is speaker extraordinaire. I was opening speaker at many Donald Trump for President events. I speak at Republican, conservative, and college GOP events, and I'm available to be the star at your next event. Contact me to arrange for a Wayne Root keynote speech. Call toll-free 888-444-ROOT. That's 888-444-ROOT. Or email wayneroot@gmail.com.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is calling on the House to move forward regarding the USMCA.
The trade agreement with Mexico and Canada sitting there, unacted upon, really, this is outrageous, needs to come to a stop. I heard a number of Democrats in the House say they could walk and chew gum at the same time. Now's the time to prove it.
The Kentucky Republican speaking on Capitol Hill today. Two-time NASCAR champion Kyle Busch is making the media rounds. He joins ABC's Good Morning America to discuss what winning his second NASCAR championship means.
This one does feel different, although a lot of the circumstances were quite similar. 2015, we won our final race of that season in the regular season. with still like 15 races left to go in the year. This year it was about 20 races left to go in the year, so a little longer stretch before being able to win that finale at Homestead Miami Speedway. So we saved the best for last. That's all that matters. Win that last one and go home and take home that beautiful trophy.
And since then, well, you had a son then, Brexton, though, is 4 years old.
Yeah.
And he convinced you to take a victory lap?
He did, yeah. He asked me. We were down on the racetrack right after the race was over, and he goes, Dad, can I go for a ride with you around? Because I still had to make one more time around to pull in the victory lane for the celebration. And so I was like, hell yeah, man, I'm all for that. So we asked NASCAR if they would, you know, let us do that and get him in the car with me, and they were gracious enough to allow us to do that, and we had fun. That was one of the coolest moments. People asked me what was so cool about the whole experience after the race, and that was probably number one.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
So hello, it's Joe Peters. I'm sitting here with Eric Kolb. Hey, Eric, say hello.
Hey, Joe, how are you? Great to be here.
So we're doing good. We're showing on the meter that we're